Please be seated. It is great to be with you today and with Lily. The last Sunday of the church year, the reign of Christ, the Sunday that acts as the last chapter of the plot that has been unfolding since the church year began with the first Sunday of Advent last year. And it reveals a very surprising conclusion. The entire story has been about, wait for it, politics. Now, if you're like me, that's a real downer. That's like saying Elizabeth and Darcy's journey battling against Pride and Prejudice in Jane Austen's great novel by that name was nothing more in the end than a suitable arrangement. For most of us, saying that God's adventure with the world, as we follow the chapter titles through the church year, ends in politics, is like saying after you've had your first gelato in Florence, Italy, the home of all great gelato, pistachio rules, by the way, well, in the end, it's just sugar. No, Elizabeth and Darcy's battles to find a partner is, however things must work practically, and of course they have to, is about the journey towards a real and lasting love affair, towards marriage, isn't it? Surely gelato in Florence is about the romance of Italy, the art, the architecture, the cafe sidewalk on which you sit with your love, as you savor the exquisite texture and flavors of, yes, sugar, but way more than that. So when I say the entire story is about politics, you smell a rat. And so you should. And you rightly discern there's something like a different definition coming, and you'd be right again. See, you're on a roll this morning. There's a good reason we don't like politics. In the ancient world, as for much of Christian history, the word politics meant the will of the king. Politics was reduced to obey the king or else. This meant that politics was defined as power, beating one's chest in an ongoing show of dominance was what drove wars and the oppression of the people. Even when through the advent of the Enlightenment, people conceived of different ways of governing, things like democracy, communism, and the like, these things ultimately resulted in a prime minister, or a president, or a head of the Politburo, who, when elected or appointed, would, as they say, consolidate power. That is, fire bureaucrats who had served in the previous administrations and appoint officials who would keep their thumb pressed down. This is what we mean when we use the phrase politics as usual. And politics as usual is still, for the most part, the only politics the world has ever experienced, whether here in this town, this country, or anywhere at any time. It was after World War I, when countries that had largely drawn on Christian heritage and Christian ideals emerged with the largest self-inflicted wounds the world had ever experienced, that the Christian church began to wake up to her role in this history. The church began to wake up to the fact that she had betrayed the gospel in a rather fundamental way. So that from the time of Constantine forward, and now, most graphically, post-World War I, in Flanders Fields, Christ's message had been shorn from politics and relegated to some heaven in some unseen and uninfluential realm. The Feast of the Reign of Christ was created in 1925 to bring us back to God's shalom, the idea that is most central to everything in the Bible. It was created to show us that the way towards that ideal can never happen by politics as usual. It was created with a fresh recognition that though the world's structures will always act in the way that they act, there is another way, another hope, God's politics. Father, forgive them, for they know not what they do. Spoken while he hangs in agony, these are the first words Jesus speaks in our gospel scene today. We don't know what it sounded like when he said them. No doubt he had to gasp to get the words out. Such is the asphyxiating impact of hanging by nails. But the meaning is unmistakable. Here is an authoritative command for God reaching out, by God reaching out, not in a spasm of revenge or to consolidate power, but to forgive. To forgive them. Father, forgive them. To forgive all of them, the soldiers, the rulers, the crowds, and the criminals hanging beside him. And to forgive them before any one of them has said sorry, before any one of them has expressed remorse. Power will not, cannot bring shalom. Forgiveness does. We seek to do to God the very worst, and it turns out that at that very moment, God is seeking to do to us the very best. If Jesus the King forgives the very people who are crucifying him, then you and I are forgiven at our very worst. At just that point on our journey when we are most tempted to say, "For that, I cannot be forgiven." And so this way of God begins to lap up against the world's way. It begins to lap up against every life and continues to spread wherever people forgive, even before anyone has said sorry. It continues wherever people are given second chances and wherever people give back as they recognize that without grace, they could never have achieved what they have achieved. And so in God's politics, there's always a way forward for you, for the world, heck, even for politicians. At the moment we do our worst, there is God doing the very best thing God has ever done. Secondly, and this comes out through irony, God is saving the world through Christ's refusal to save himself. The scoffers who mock him for helping others but not himself are ironically speaking the truth of God's politics. Forgiveness speaks of what we are rescued from, sin, guilt, shame. But salvation speaks of what we are rescued for. Indeed, it's the very word shalom in the Hebrew. A word, a world made whole, meaningful partnership with God, made possible by God for all of us. God's forgiveness, God's politics is forgiveness from and salvation towards, and then climactically, presence with. Most human individuals who from time immemorial lived under the powers that be have had the romantic thought go through their brains, if I could just present my case before the king or the president, I'd receive justice. Maybe I'd even be remembered, and favor would come my way. Romantic thoughts of justice are often just that, they're romantic, idealistic thoughts. But what we see here blows by romance or idealism. When one of the criminals hears Jesus forgiving those who are crucifying him, He has the amazing faith insight that Jesus really is a king. We hear him say, "Remember me when I come into your kingdom, when you come into your kingdom." And we hear Jesus say in return, "Today you will be with me in paradise." St. Ambrose in the 4th century said in reference to this line, "So much is given when so little is asked." This is the reign of Christ. And all of this applies to Lily and to us. As Lily's mom and dad and her sponsors stand in for her in her renunciations and affirmations, as we affirm alongside them our baptismal covenant, we're not just saying religious words. We're signing on to God's way with the world, to God's politics of forgiveness, salvation, and loving presence. Life for Lily and life for all of us. It's always been about the new polis, the new creation. Florence in the spring, where you can eat gelato for breakfast. Finding love even when pride and prejudice trips us up. God's politics. It's actually a very satisfying last chapter. Amen.